Welcome to Jaguars This Week,
presented by Aetna,
live from Latitude 30.
Jaguars This Week,
with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lugeman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who?
Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome into Jaguars This Week, live from Latitude 30 on the south side of Jacksonville, right across from the Avenues Mall. Brian Sexton, along with my broadcast partner, Jeff Lugeman. John Osher, senior writer at Jaguars.com, is here. And the big guy sitting next to me is Tony Boselli. We're here every Wednesday night from 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock to talk about the Jaguars game, look forward to this week's game. We have Fred Taylor to discuss this evening as well. So plenty in store for you, and let's just kick it off with the biggest piece of information today. I woke up this morning, grabbed the Wall Street Journal. First section, story on the refs. Actually, the first section was an editorial on the refs by Fran Tarkenton. Next segment, Corporate America, top of the fold, headline story about the NFL refs. Back of the personal lifestyle issue is a column about the NFL refs. And I said, Jennifer, I think they're going to get this resolved today. And she said, why? And I said, the Wall Street Journal has three stories about it.
Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. I mean, when you get that, you know, then the NFL starts to go, whoa, we got to do something. And, of course, you know, the Monday night game was just a debacle. And it was amazing to me because,
You're being kind.
Yeah, when Green Bay scored, I went to bed. I said, this game's over. There's no way that Russell Wilson will be able to take the Seattle Seahawks down to score and win that ball game. Wake up the next morning and turn on the highlights, and all of a sudden, huh? And then for them to be able to review that play and then to not overturn it in the review is even worse than the call itself, in which the officials were 15 yards out of position when the ball was coming down. Terrible.
It was terrible. It was bad on multiple, I mean, all the points you made, and compounded by the fact that the league came out with the response they did, which was embarrassing. And the worst part is it forced me to stay up an extra 2 hours that night because I could not get enough of the replay, the commentary, the coaches' press conferences, the players, and then Twitter.
It was really good.
Twitter was very interesting.
And so the word today is that they're close, that something should be done.
Yeah, they actually, I think it was Mort prematurely said that they got a deal done, then came out and said it's not signed, it's not signed yet, but they are, I think, extremely close. Your point, extremely close.
You've got to have them on the field on Sunday, don't you, after Monday night?
No.
Oh, really?
No.
I don't think they wouldn't be ready,
and I think that's why that the whole thing has been kind of slowed down, because there's no way that they could get them ready by this week's game. And you're dealing with Thursday games, too. You got a Thursday game, and then you have the whole block on Sunday. Yeah. So you're going to be ready to go into an entire week with the new officials, in my opinion.
I agree, because I don't think for the what integrity's left is you don't want replacement officials Thursday night and then regular officials for the rest of the weekend. I think if you're going to go in with replacements, you go replacements the entire weekend. There's no way the regulars will be ready for tomorrow, and then next week you have your regular officials back on the field. But it was awful. Not to the level of that game.
It wasn't just that call either.
No, it was the pass interference they called on Shields.
The roughing the quarterback.
To extend the play was criminal. The roughing the quarterback was not roughing the quarterback. And they don't know the rules is the problem.
Which has led to an overall lack of control of the game.
The games are so long.
Right.
Every game. I did the Jets-Dolphins game. Now, this had overtime in it, but it was a four-hour affair. It was...
And everybody knows you have to kick an extra point if there's a touchdown on the last play. Jeff, you know that.
Jeff, how about this? In the Dolphins-Jets game I did, they had two pass interference penalties that they called illegal contact and only gave them 5 yards instead of spot foul.
Oh, that's not good.
And at halftime, I asked one of the people, I said, am I the only one that saw that? And they go, no. They blew it twice.
Can you explain? You both watched the tape. You watched the tape of the Jags-Colts game? Explain that. Anthony Johnson jumps offside, sacks Gabbert, throws him to the ground. Then you've got Brewster getting up off the ground. Corey Redding comes over and shoves him. He shoves him back. All of a sudden now they lift the flag, say it wasn't offsides. There's no penalty for slamming the quarterback to the ground. And, oh, by the way, you got a 15-yard penalty going back the other way.
It's called clueless. They are clueless.
It was pretty bad. It was bad because when the guy jumped off sides and it was Antonio Johnson or Corey Redding.
I thought it was the nose guard.
Okay, it was Antonio Johnson. He jumps off sides, sacks a quarterback when he was off sides. That's the second time that's happened this year. It happened in Minnesota, obviously, with Jared Allen. And then Brewster just continues to block Antonio Johnson to get him off of the quarterback. And it was, I mean, that wasn't even anywhere close to being, you know, an unnecessary roughness penalty. And then when he gets up, that's when Corey Redding comes over and gives Mike Brewster the shiver. And then Uche comes over and bumps into Redding to let him know, hey, that's my guy you're messing with. Corey Redding turns around and gives Uche a shiver. And I mean, it was all on film, and I'm sitting there going, how in the world did they ever call that against Mike Brewster?
The funny thing is, Jeff, so I was watching it, the All-22, the coach's tape, and not seeing the TV copy. So I'm watching this procedure. So I'm watching, okay, he's offsides. That's a penalty. And then I see the pushing and shoving, and I'm thinking, at worst, we're going to get 5 yards and it'll be offsetting. And so you'll have no commentary, obviously. You're just watching the coach's tape. The next play, we're back 15 yards. I'm thinking, how did that happen? I mean, where did we go backwards 15 yards?
We said the same thing on the radio broadcast. Neither one of us could quite figure out what it was.
It's mind-blowing to try to figure out what's going on in the field because it's so chaotic and they have so little control. And the thing that has surprised me, they don't know the rules. They honestly don't know the rules of football. Again, this Sunday, the Washington Redskins against the Bengals game, they were going to do a 10-second runoff after a spike, which there is no such thing as a 10-second runoff because of a penalty, which created a $25,000 fine for the coach, chaos on the sidelines, extending the game. I mean,
penalties would be a runoff, but not the one that
happened. Not when the clock stopped.
But yes. In fairness to the guys who are on the field, they're not NFL officials, and they're not close.
Not NFL. The guy that called the touchdown, John, he has the highest level he has is Division III, and he only has 4 years of experience.
Right.
How is he on the field?
Well,
he raised his hand.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you're not available. You're in the broadcast booth.
I'll be a ref.
And because the good college guys couldn't do it. So all of a sudden you're down to the very last level, and this is what you get.
And one of the reasons why they couldn't get the good college officials is that if you look at all the major college conferences, the heads of the officiating in each conference is a former NFL official.
All NFL guys.
And the NFL or the heads of those conferences basically told their officials, said, you will not work for the NFL. If you do, then when you come back, you don't have a job. And that was their way of supporting the NFL Referees Association.
And I'm sure it was implied by NFL officials, if you do this, you ain't going to be the next guy called up. You know,
have fun doing this for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks,
right,
and you'll never do it again.
If your goal is to do this,
right, and the division,
long-term,
the high school Division III guys, and the guys who got fired from the lingerie league, and the guys who couldn't do AFL, know they're never going to get there. I mean, this is literally.
And the NFL is a complex rule, but I mean, we follow it all the time.
If you think about this, this is like the bottom of the barrel. I'm sure they're great guys and everything, but in the officiating world, this is like really guys who are not ever going anywhere. I mean, and now they're officiating at the highest level, a $9 billion industry, and completely. I mean, listen, the integrity of the league is in question now this year because you had a game that was taken away from a team. And so my question happens at the end of the year, what happens if the Green Bay Packers miss the playoffs by one game?
It'll be questioned a little bit, but it won't hurt the league long term.
But it should.
The biggest hit over the weekend, though, was that call in that Green Bay-Seattle game, it changed the gambling
anywhere from 150 to a million,
and the NFL
billion,
and the NFL can say that that has no impact on what we do or anything like that.
Yes,
it does.
Sure, it does.
Because you have to be able to have a game that is straightforward and it has integrity.
Well, Jeff, but you talk about the gambling and the economic impact, but I go back to the Green Bay Packers. If they, let's say, they make the playoffs but don't get a home field advantage, now they don't have a quote-unquote owner, but let's say they had an owner, what would be the impact of his balance sheet or his cash flow losing a home playoff game or two home playoff games?
It would be on him because the owner's
behind
this more than
get out. I agree, it is on him, but it's a big, there's ramifications that don't end Monday night, but they continue to go throughout the year.
And that wasn't the only bad call, though, the personal foul. Derek Cox was called for interference.
I'm trying to find the interference on Rasheen's interference.
That was just
was he.
I went multiple times back. I'm like, maybe I'm missing something.
Heck of a play.
Great.
Heck of a play. I mean, I can understand it.
We'll talk about this more. He's playing.
Possibly.
He's starting to play better.
A funny thing about that interference play, I asked him on Monday, somebody I was around asked him on Monday, you know, was that interference? He said no. And somebody said, well, you never think it's interference. He goes, oh, I interfered in that game, but not on that play.
All right, let me interrupt it right here and give it over to Joe as we step aside for our first break. We are live at Latitude 30 on the south side across from the Avenues Mall right there on US 1. Come on down and join us. Joe will be wandering out the audience with that microphone for a little interaction. Bring it, Joe.
Thank you, Brian Sexton. When you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville locations. Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. We'll continue right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30. We'd love to see you. Come on by if you get a chance. We'll be here until 8 o'clock tonight. By the way, this Sunday, during the Jaguars-Bengals game, Fred Taylor is going to be inducted into the Pride of the Jaguars. You don't want to miss this historic event. Fred Taylor going into the Pride of the Jaguars, and it's all brought to you by Florida Blue in pursuit of health.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Back at Latitude 30 for Jaguars This Week. Every Wednesday night, we're here. Come on by and join us. Again, Joe will be out soliciting questions in the audience before too long. Injury report is out. It's looking better for the Jaguars. Let me run down it for you. Austin Lane, full participation. Cam Bradfield, full participation. Rashad Jennings, full participation. Montel Owens, full. Kevin Rutland, full. Evan Britton was limited. Tyson Alualu and Brad Meester have been getting Wednesdays off. They did not participate today. LaRon Robinson did not participate with the concussion. George Selvey, Daryl Smith, again, did not participate. Thoughts on the Jaguars' injury report?
It's good news, and I was kind of wondering about Evan's status this week because we saw before the game at Indianapolis, Evan and also Cameron Bradfield warming up, and they were going to be game-time decisions, and if they could get one of those guys, they would have tried to get him up. And Cameron looked the better of the two in that warm-up that we saw. And so it doesn't surprise me that Cameron went full today and Evan was not.
And I think I think it's more important to get Cameron back than Evan back at this point. You want both of them back. Brewster has played okay. I don't think he kills you in there. You want Bradfield back in the lineup over Guy Wimper.
Yeah, Mike Brewster is not a dominant physical player, but he's a real smart player. He's always in position. He's always doing what he's supposed to do, and he doesn't get the old whiff, you know, where all of a sudden a guy beats him, and then his guy's charging into the backfield, making a tackle for a loss or, you know, making a hit on the quarterback. You know, the one thing that he's got to do
to
get his career kind of going is get a little bit bigger, like Tony said, a little stronger. And I think he's going to be a good player and have
too.
A long career.
I do, too.
One interesting thing on the injury report, LaRon Robinson was cleared from the concussion on Monday or Tuesday, Mike Mularkey said. He was out there early today and then didn't practice. So I'm not sure what that's going to mean for him long term.
Real quick, let me run down the Bengals for you because theirs kind of looks like the Jaguars has in recent weeks. Nate Clements has a calf, one of the starting corners. Leon Hall, I told you calf earlier, Logs, that's what I read. Now they're saying hamstring for Leon Hall, the other corner over there. Dre Kirkpatrick, their rookie, their first-round pick, a knee, did not participate. Tight end Donald Lee did not participate.
Yeah, he's had a quad all year.
Bernard Scott, who's a halfback, did not participate. Left tackle Andrew Whitworth, who has a knee, did not practice
he'll be
today.
Fine.
Right.
Yeah,
he'll play.
Then you look at cornerback Jason Allen, limited with a thigh. Carlos Dunlap, limited with a knee, although he started playing again. Jeff Fain, the hamstring, the center, has a hamstring.
He's terrible.
Limited. And
he'll
Reggie
still play, though.
Reggie Nelson, you hope he plays.
What?
Limited.
Fain will play.
Yeah, I know. He'll play. I'm just saying he's terrible.
Isn't he in his
best?
Those
tackles are pretty good, though.
Isn't Fain in his 13th?
10th.
18th, 19th, 20th? He's been playing forever.
10th year. Played with the Bucks last year.
Two tackles are good.
Two tackles are very good. And the rookie first-round draft pick.
Dre Kirkpatrick.
No. The right guard, Zeiter.
Well, that's right. They had two first-round picks. Yeah,
yep.
The kid from
Wisconsin.
Yep.
Good player. So, I mean, they got obviously – they didn't have to expect – you know, at the beginning of the year when they came out, they had signed Free agent guard Travell Wharton from Carolina. And Tony, you've seen him. I don't know. I'm not sure what kind of a player he is because I haven't seen Carolina for a while.
A guy? Yeah,
he was going to be their left guard. And then Kevin Cook, I believe his name is, the center for the Bengals, ended up having an ankle, I believe it was. And
they signed Fain 10 days before the season started.
Yeah, and they put Cook, the expected starting center for the Bengals, on that designated injured reserve where they can hope to bring him back, you know, 6 or 8 weeks down the road.
Now, are you going to finally admit to me that I was right and you were wrong, that this Bengals team is pretty dang good?
Yeah, I watched him on film.
We had that argument a couple weeks ago, and I said, this is a good football team.
Yeah, Monday and Tuesday, and Tony was right on the money, particularly with the Bengals' offense, mostly their passing game. Their running game doesn't do anything to get me excited.
But it's okay.
But that's okay.
Because you're right. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, he's a good, solid back. They're not going to wow you.
He's a guy.
But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Andy Dalton in that passing game is so dynamic right now. I mean, they are really good on offense, I think. And then defensively, and I know we'll kind of break this down even further, you know, with Carlos Dunlap coming back at one of the ends, it makes Michael Johnson, the other end, better, who had 3 sacks and was AFC player.
They've got 4 pretty good ends.
They're pretty good players. Pretty good. They're good on both sides of the ball, I think.
What is it that makes their passing game so dynamic? Is it having a player like AJ Green, or is it having a tight end in A.J. Green? I mean, what is it that makes them so...
Tight end and Gresham, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Gresham.
All of the above. You know, all of the above. I mean, they've got 5 wide receivers, 7 on the roster, but they got 5 guys that they feel real good about.
Who can play.
They can play Hawkins, a little short guy.
Slot guy.
In fact, the Bengals actually kind of called him a water bug type of player, and that's exactly what he looks like.
Exactly right.
Armand Benz, a big physical wide receiver that was actually here in Jacksonville
last year.
He's got some ability. Gresham, the tight end, they split him out like a wide receiver sometimes.
But A.J. Green is just
he's a beast.
He's a stud.
You know what's surprising, and I talked about this on Inside the Jaguars today on Jaguars.com. Linda, can I get it? Thank you. And do you know that A.J. Green does not have a catch on third down?
That's surprising to me.
Isn't that amazing?
That is surprising.
You know, Andy Dalton has
a lot of other ones, though.
Yeah. He's got 11. Andy Dalton has 11 completions on third down. And A.J. Green does not have one of them.
If I remember, at least I saw him week one. I did the Baltimore game. And they go to Hawkins a lot in that situation. It seems
Hawkins has like 4. I think Gresham has 5, 4 or 5. And then one of the other Hawkins has 4 or 5, so there's 9 between those two, between Gresham and then Hawkins. Not sure which one has 4, which one has 5, and then somebody else has 2. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
If you're Mel Tucker, how do you work on A.J. Green, who had 5 catches for 90 yards and a touchdown against these guys last year?
Well,
who gets the call, or how do you bracket it?
If I'm Mel Tucker right now, I'm feeling really good about what I got at Indianapolis. And I'm talking the production out of Rasheen Mathis and Derek Cox. And Tony's in agreement with me on this one. Derek Cox was a dominant player at Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Dominant player. I mean, whoever he was covering, the play was over to that side.
I was actually surprised.
I was shocked.
I mean, I turn on the tape and I'm watching it, and I had to remind myself that number one, he was out there. And then I'm like, man, who is that? And then every time, Derek, I mean, just a shutdown corner. And so I agree with you that Mel is probably very excited about that. But has to be hugely concerned the fact that they have no sacks in the last 2 games and they cannot get pressure right now with 4 guys. And so you look at this matchup and you say, if we have to rush more than 4 guys, that means we're going a man on the back half against one of the best young receivers in football.
I thought they got a little pressure the other day. They couldn't get Andrew Luck down.
I don't know how many times he threw the ball.
Wasn't great.
I saw
46. He threw it 46 times.
Okay, out of 46 times, I bet you he was affected as a quarterback 6.
That's probably about right.
That's not a very good number.
And none of them got him down.
With good coverage on the back end.
Great coverage. He had to hold the ball.
Yeah, it's good. And especially you were disappointed in that game production-wise from the pressure standpoint, because the Indianapolis Colts are not exactly a real talented group up front.
No, they're bad.
I mean, they were a patchwork offensive line. They're young in spots, and really I thought that was going to be a game that the Jaguars were really going to do some damage with their front.
But significant that the Jaguars, I think, got their hands on 4 balls, not including Rasheen and not including Derek, who I think both got a deflection taken away by interference, if I recall. They had a chance at a big game defensively if they could catch interception.
All right, we've reached the bottom of the hour, which means it's time for news on our flagship radio station, News Talk WOKV. But first, these words from Joe Fortunato.
Thank you, Brian. Hey, season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer a Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. For more information on joining the Refer a Fan program, just call the Jaguars Ticket Office, 904-633-2000, or visit jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, continues on Jaguars Radio. Well, it's Sonny's. You'll get a huge Brian Sexton size helping of baby back ribs, plus two of your favorite sidekicks and garlic bread or cornbread, all for only $12.99.
Is that the half order?
If you want to make it all you can eat, it's just $4 more. Sonny's, the first name of barbecue. Now back to the first name at Jaguars Radio,
it would
John
to,
Osher.
That must be the half slab. Because
wake up, Johnny.
The Buscelli
no,
size.
No, but he was talking about the size of Brian's head. That's why it's that
right.
big.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Here we go. That's all right. I can take it. I specifically asked for you to sit on my couch. Just hold on, big boy.
We're trying to get – we're bonding for the – bowling.
Oh, let's go.
No,
what are we going to do?
We're going against them. We got to be on the
next
team.
Week.
All right, I'm in.
Next week.
Let's do it.
Okay.
I'm all for next week.
Let's go back to last week a little bit and talk more about the Jaguars' first win of the season over the Colts. You know, it's been dissected 16 different ways. You guys both watched the tape. John, you've been in the locker room a lot this week. What still stands out that bears mentioning?
Jeff, you were there, Jeff.
Well, to me, the opportunities at the end of the game with 4-minute drill to really put the game away and not to allow the Colts to have a possession, I thought was really conservative. And I think when you go on the road like that, you got exactly what you deserved, I thought. And that was that Indianapolis was able to come back and get a score. You know, I didn't think it had to come to that because you had – two chances. I think it was at 4-0-something, and then it was again at
156
to where you could have closed the game out and just put it away. And they weren't able to do that. And a lot of it's been talked about, and I know they ran the ball three downs on the last 4-minute drill at the 2-minute mark, and then they ran and passed on the first 4-minute drill opportunity. And I think especially when you're at the 4-minute mark and you're trying to run a 4-minute drill, you got to be aggressive. You got to be aggressive and put a drive together just like you would, you know, in your 15-play script at the beginning of a ball game, because that game is still hotly contested. And to me, you got to let them wing it a little bit.
Right now, Maurice Jones-Drew is their best player. So in a sense, that made sense, because if you hadn't done that, you've got fans saying, why don't you run Mojo three times? But at some point, if you're going to be a winning team in this league, you have to be able to have the confidence to throw on one of those downs, because it is not a three-down run situation in this league anymore.
But I'll even back it up further. I think if you look at the entire day, though, it was an ultra-conservative game plan where – and I understand partly why, because every time you drop back to pass, you felt like you had to max protect. You had to leave Mercedes in. I counted, and I don't remember the exact number, but more times than not, we had a 7-man protection against 4 guys rushing.
It was many to not many.
Many, meaning right. that there was only 3 guys out against 7 guys dropped back. Now, I don't know why they kept Mojo in, because I didn't think you needed to help Eugene. I thought you maybe could have got someone out the backside and just helped. Guy, but I'm not. I mean, listen, they have game. They're looking at the bigger picture of that, so I don't want to be overly critical. But it was so conservative that I think at the end of the game, it's hard to not continue to be conservative. And it was conservative from the first snap.
And at the end, Mike said later that on 3rd and 9 at the end, the percentages are very low picking up 3rd and 9. So the run on 3rd and 9. Makes some sense. I think the issue a lot of people had was, you know, yes, run on 3rd and 9 if you're already in that situation, but at some point in those 6 plays we're talking about to only have 1 pass, at some point that's got to change.
Well, I think, but wouldn't you guys agree it's more than just those last 6 plays for this team to take the next step and do...
He has to be able to throw on earlier downs.
It has to be able to throw throughout the game. I mean, you have to have a higher percentage and more open game plan if you want to win consistently in this league the way it is now. Not that you can't be a – I still think you can be a pound-em physical team. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers are a physical team that get after you. But they still throw – I mean, but you
but
have –
they got a really good defense.
And they got a really good defense. But you also still have to throw the ball down the field. You have to stretch defenses. You have to do those type of things that I still don't see us comfortable doing.
It's very hard to be a big-time quarterback – throwing on when most of your passes are on third and seven and up.
And I agree 100%. I mean, if you look at
but
that game.
But you know what? Just real quick, tell me, jump in here because, you know, John brings up a good point. It's really hard to bring a good quarterback, to be a good quarterback when you're throwing on third and seven or third and nine. And I go back to what I talked about A.J. Green. A.J. Green doesn't have a third down catch.
Yeah, he's a lot of big-time catching them first, second down.
But I mean, the point is –
that's a great point.
Is that, you know, here John makes a point about the Jaguars' offense. You go back and look at what Cincinnati's doing, and their best receiver, the second-rated receiver in the National Football League, is getting big chunks of yardage on first and second down.
Well, because if you watch that team, and they are a wide-open offense. They still run the ball, and they're still going to try, but they are – and you can tell – and I don't want this to be confidence or not confidence in Blaine. That's not the where I go, but – and so when I say this, this has nothing to do with Blaine, but you can tell that Jay Gruden and Marvin Lewis have full confidence in the passing offense, not just the quarterback, that they can open it up and open it up early. And looking at the game Sunday, and maybe the staff said, listen, our best chance is to beat this team, which is what you're supposed to do at the end of the game. You're supposed to win. Our best chance is to beat the Colts is to run mojo and play good defense, and that's what we're going to do. But over the long run, you can't have more yardage on the last play of the game passing than you did the entire.
And there is some time for this to play out. I think in the last couple of games, it's important to remember what we talked about earlier. They're having to leave a lot of guys in to protect because of the offensive line injuries. Over seven or eight games, if you see this as a complete trend, that's not good. As you said, Tony, you've got to try to win the game within the context of that game.
Yeah, and so I understand that. And so this is not a criticism of the overall what they did because Mike Mularkey and his staff put together a game plan to win on Sunday. And I was fine with that. They knew they could run the ball against this defense. They know that their best player is still Maurice Jones-Drew. They know their right tackle is completely overmatched against Robert Mathis and the speed that he brings. And so this is how we're going to play. And we're still playing. I don't care how good Andrew Luck is. He's still a rookie.
Yeah, but you know what I was thinking in the game? Vontae Davis versus Justin Blackmon.
And why didn't that happen?
I don't know. Yeah, I really thought that would be a good matchup for
Jeff,
the Jaguars.
Did you see the separation in the passing game?
There were some. I think, too, that in that, particularly in the second half, Blaine wasn't as accurate as he needed to be.
No, I agree with that. That's fair.
The protection wasn't what it needed to be. I mean, I get it. I get that.
No, I get why they did it.
But, you know, what we're saying is not to criticize them that was terrible. We're not. We're not saying
that. We're looking big picture.
We're saying that when this team continues to develop offensively, you would expect the ratio to certainly change more towards the passing.
Well, they certainly know that. I mean,
I know.
We're just talking about issues here that obviously have to change in the long term.
But I still didn't like that 4-minute drills.
I guess you hear the same. All of you guys hear the same thing from the fan base. Is oh gosh, is it the same thing as last year? It's just gonna be mojo.
Right. No,
72 yards of passing until the last play of the game. You know, have we not progressed at all? I mean,
they're legitimate questions because the last 2 weeks, that's what you've seen.
Right, in the last 3 days, that's all I have heard, and that's all I mean that you see. And so I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to what they said for that game. This is how we have to play based on our personnel, who we are playing.
Just to backtrack to last week, we were talking about the receivers, and I think the thought was they weren't very good against the Texans. And it would be ridiculous to suggest that they were markedly improved because they didn't catch many passes. But were they better? Were their routes better? You know, Jerry Sullivan said to you as he was walking off the field before our television show, I want to see some production today. Yep. When you watch the tape, did you see that?
Yeah, I thought the wide receivers were better as a whole. I really do. Now, there were some instances where it could have been better. I thought LaRon Robinson could have caught that ball early in which he ended up getting kneed in the back of the head and then had to come out of the ball game. I thought that Kevin Elliott
on the play in the goal line, if he ends up running that route the proper way, his head is already turned back around. And he sees that ball coming, and it's a touchdown. You know, so I mean, so there are opportunities that they can be better. But you know, that was a game in which it was kind of shared as far as the reason why the passing game wasn't as productive as it could be. Protection issues, quarterback could have been better, wide receivers could have been a little bit better too.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree in the sense of I don't know you can make a judgment based on that game if it was better because of the way they played. There were so few opportunities and there were so few instances where you could sit there and say, boy, they are open. Boy, that is a great route. You know,
well, the most telling thing is after the game, they were all talking about Justin Blackman's block on the 59-yard touchdown.
Right. That was a great play. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that, though. You know what I mean? I don't want to be talking about what a great block by Justin Blackman.
I thought, Jeff, as I was watching the tape yesterday, I'm like, the only thing I've noticed about our rookie first-round pick is this great block, and I almost – like start panicking. Oh, no. I don't want to have that conversation.
We need a break. Let's take it real quick. Because we had the same conversation
quick,
about Reggie Williams.
Justin Blackman is not Reggie Williams.
No, I'm just going right there. We'll talk about Blackman when we return, Joe.
Thanks, Brian. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today, proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live at Latitude 30, rolls on Jaguars Radio. This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Football Fanatics. Brian?
Just reading this tweet, and it says that Golden Tate, the Seattle receiver, has picked up 5,000 Twitter followers since the touchdown on Monday night, but the T.J. Lang, the offensive lineman who dropped the F-bomb on the NFL, has got 90,000.
He has 30,000 in about an hour, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was... Wham, bam, baby. you wanted to hear it.
I hope the Twitter pays like a dollar per follower because he might get a – is he going to get hit by the NFL for his comments, you think?
No.
You don't think so?
No way because,
as long as they don't berate them on the field.
I don't know.
I disagree. I don't know if you can berate the NFL in public without feeling the wrath as a player.
The reason I
coaches can, I know that.
I go back to what Roger Goodell said in response to the one guy that was making comments about the guy in Baltimore that was making comments about the marriage thing that was going on in Maryland. It was a linebacker. Did a commercial.
It was Ian Badasia, wasn't it?
Ian Badasia.
He did a commercial.
About gay marriage. That's right.
And then the punter, Chris Cluey, chimed in from Minnesota as well.
Exactly.
That's different.
And when Roger Goodell came out and defended the players and said they are free to speak their mind.
Yeah, on issues, not against the shield.
Not against the
officials.
But not against officials. You can't say it against officials, Jeff. I think they can fine him if they want.
Yeah, but I saw somewhere the league said as long as they don't berate these officials, they're not going to fine
them.
They're
not going to do a thing about officials. It because if they do, it just attracts more attention.
Oh, I agree. That's smart.
To the issue.
I agree with that.
All right, to Justin Blackman real quick. And I think I've made the analogy to all of you, but you know, it reminds me a bit of Fred Taylor his rookie year. Didn't beat out James Stewart in training camp, which is why he was drafted. Curtis Enos had the big day against Chicago on opening day. Fred got two or three carries at the end of that Chiefs game here in week two, and people were calling him bust, bust, bust. In fact, you wrote about it in your
you called him a bust,
Ozone.
John?
No, he'll tell the story in a moment. But then here he goes down. Stewart goes down early in the Baltimore game in week three. Fred gets the ball, 52-yard touchdown. 17 touchdowns later. He runs just behind Randy Moss, who had the same amount of touchdowns for Rookie of the Year. So I'm just wondering if we can expect a breakout game for Justin at some point because his talent is so extreme.
Well, you certainly hope so. But I said all during the draft that rookie wide receivers often go through long stretches where they're struggling. And I covered Reggie Wayne in 2001. He had 27 receptions as a rookie. Now, you obviously hope Justin gets more than that. I think anybody would take Reggie Wayne's career from any first-round draft pick.
Absolutely.
But it can take a long time, especially for a guy who is not a burner and who is not, you know, physically dominant over the opponent. And that's what Justin is. So to me, it's not surprising that there are a lot of hiccups early because he was not rated where A.J. Green was rated the year before. He was not expected to be a can't-miss, automatic, quick adapting player. So there's going to be adjustments as he learns how to get open against NFL defenses.
I think we're going to see it any week. I really do. I mean, I think that we're going to see Justin Blackmon break out any week. I mean, what we saw in the preseason is what we saw. That was not a fluke. That was legitimate star potential that we saw in the preseason, and we will see it any week.
I had a coach who is not given to hyperbole like I am say to me, you know he's going to be a star, don't you? And when that coach said it to me, knowing his personality, I went, wow, I can't believe he just said that. So that's why I asked the question, is this guy
I hope so
going to give us one of those games, and then it uncorks the bottle?
I hope so. I don't know if I agree with John. When John was talking, I really was buying into what he was saying, and then Jeff actually convinced me that he might be right. And so I don't know which one's right. But I do think that he has a extreme amount of talent. I think he is going to be a number one receiver in this league. I hope it's this year, and I hope Jeff's right that it's any game, because the kid's talented. He showed what he could do in the preseason. Obviously, it's the preseason. But he didn't forget how to play football. He didn't forget how to – I mean, he was the best receiver in football for 2 years in a row in college football. I mean, the guy is dynamic. So I do think whether it's immediately like Jeff or whether it's next year like John said.
I got the impression there that he just didn't want to agree with either one of us because he likes to disagree so much with both of us.
Actually, well, I'm still trying to get over you saying earlier you're absolutely right, Tony. I mean, that was about 45 minutes ago, and I'm still trying to get past that.
I was extending an olive branch.
Blackmon is a guy who seems to still have his confidence, though. Doesn't appear to be upset, to be shaken by it. You know, there may be some frustration back there, but it's not as if he's showing it every time he gets in front of a camera.
Well, he believes he can play. I mean, he's never known anything different than to have success, and he knows how to play the game. And when I was talking earlier about him possibly struggling, if you just use other receivers as a reference, as good as A.J. Green was, he was barely over 1,000 yards receiving last year.
1,057.
Yeah, it's just difficult for rookies to put up those number one type numbers that people associate with the Larry Fitzgerald, with the Megatron. It's just hard to do.
Could we see him getting – did you guys see him get a little frustrated in the game? Because I saw him on the slant he dropped, he then went and headbutted the corner and had a little bit of – I liked it too, but you can almost sense him – I mean, the frustration level of not – making, whether it's just that play or the overall where he's at so far.
Well, Mike has talked a lot about how frustrated he is and that he talks to him a lot during the game. Mike keeps emphasizing that he needs to slow down his routes, he needs to be a little more patient, and it sounds like, again, it's just stuff that a rookie who's wanting to do well trying to adapt to the speed of the game.
Yeah, should we be talking about Cecil Shorts?
I was going to bring him up next.
Yeah, I figured you were. Should we be talking about him
right
now?
I was reading John's mind on that one.
Yeah, Jeff made the comment in the preseason that Cecil Short...
Was I right?
I'm not going to give you... I'm not going to say you were absolutely right, because absolutely is way too strong of a term, but you were right. Jeff was right about Cecil Short.
I was standing right there the day he goes, that's the star of camp.
And I didn't agree. I said,
standing there then also.
I thought he was inconsistent. I thought he disappeared a little bit during the preseason games. And Jeff was adamant that it was just lack of opportunity more than anything in the preseason, that he was going to be a guy who was going to be productive. And the two biggest plays of the year so far from Cecil Shorts, and that, first of all, that touchdown pass at the end of the game was maybe the best throw Blaine Gabbert's ever made in his career so far.
It's one of the best throws I've seen all year in the league.
So I would like them to drop back about 30 times a game and let him make those type of throws, because he obviously can do it. I mean, he threw a ball and read the corner, the underneath coverage, and threw it because he saw the defender's back was to him and threw it right over his head.
Yeah, the nickel.
Nickel hit Cecil Shorts in stride, and Cecil has some wheels, man.
Well, and Jeff made the point, we were talking earlier this week, how good he is with the ball, Blaine. It's okay to let him throw.
All right, that's the news signal for the top of the hour. We are live with Jaguars This Week at Latitude 30, folks. The playground for the mind for adults. Come on down and enjoy the show. Enjoy some great food.
We're on US 1 right across from the Avenues Mall. Come say hello. Jaguars This Week returns for hour number two right after the news here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Latitude 30. Jaguars This Week, with a voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who? Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
All right, welcome back live inside Latitude 30 on Jacksonville Southside, right across from the Avenues Mall. We're on U.S. Highway 1, and we're here every Wednesday night amidst the bowlers, the moviegoers, the video game folks.
The food.
Yeah, the food. Yeah.
By the way, I went back to the old standby. I went back to the old slider sampler. Because it was so good 2 weeks ago, I went back to it again today, and we got a new one for you.
All right, what's that?
Last week, after the show...
Oh, I was just thinking the same thing. It was joyous.
Johnny Ozone...
It was an experience.
Tony Boselli stuck around afterwards and sat at that table right over there where the gentleman in the red hat is at, and we shared an apple cobbler.
The three of you did.
And out of a trough.
It was the biggest cobbler I've ever seen.
I mean, it's on a dish that's as big as your plate and deep.
Jeff, I don't think that's a normal cobbler. I think they made that for us.
No, that was the normal.
That's huge.
And you know what we're going to do tonight?
I'm not doing it again.
Peach.
No, I'm done.
And we're going to get four scoops of ice cream and split it all up.
Folks, so you got to get down here. It's a great place.
So good.
We obviously have fun. Joe Fortunato's got a microphone. He's out in the crowd. So if you want to take part in our Jaguars NFL conversation, we certainly welcome you to do that. All right, let's reset for you a couple of things. First of all, the Jaguars injury report looks good for the first time this season. Most of the guys who have not been practicing did practice, with the exception of Eben Britton, who was limited today. LaRon Robinson, as John Osher reported, was cleared to practice but did not today, so we're unsure of his status. The other is that still ESPN is reporting that the referee lockout could end soon, and their lead says that there are enough negotiations yesterday that the possibility remains that you could have the locked out officials back this weekend. We've discussed.
They'll be back next week.
They can't be back Thursday because they.
Right.
The rule is they have to be. I mean, they're there 24 hours before the game.
That one's out. But ESPN, I'm just reporting
right now.
ESPN is still.
They'll be back starting next week, and Thursday night's game would be my educated guess.
That's my guess too.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see exactly how this one rolls out. Early today, there were reports on other media websites that it was over, that they had reached an agreement that still has not come down. But it is looking more and more likely as we go. We talked a lot in the first hour about the Jaguars game against the Colts. We can obviously go forward with the Bengals game this week. We were talking just about the division and about Chris Johnson. You realize he has
a
4-yard performance, a 17-yard performance, and a 24-yard performance. And he was in camp this year.
He's lighting it up.
Wow. First of all, he scored 44 points without him. He goes down on first contact.
Yeah.
It looks as if a guy...
You just blow on him, he's going to fall down.
That is trying to save his body for the next day. You know what he looks like? He looks like he's playing in the Pro Bowl.
Yep.
I mean, and it doesn't get any worse than that, and that's good. That's good for the Jaguars.
Hey, don't change.
Chris, just keep running like you're doing, baby. You're doing great.
I saw a game in 09. The Colts were playing the Titans when I was covering the Colts. Clint Session, Chris Johnson came around the end, and Clint Session hit him so hard. I think Chris had about 65 yards at that point. He had about three the rest of the game. And that sort of sums up Chris Johnson.
It's going good, he's pretty good. But
he'll light it up. He'll cut back across the field, but he's not a guy who likes to get hit.
And I guess the reports are...
Aren't they paying him like a 11, 12 a year?
A lot of money.
Could you imagine? Yeah. It's almost like $1 million a yard.
Now, see, if I'm Maurice Jones-Drew and I'm seeing that, I'm not real happy.
No.
Well, listen, we're not going to get into this tonight, but Maurice just needs to keep on doing what he's doing and everything will be taken care of.
Everything will take care of itself.
That's that stat. We were talking about him, and
I thought maybe he had about 100 yards in three games. I didn't realize he didn't even have a 25-yard performance yet. So it bears well. Jaguars don't see the Titans for a long time. So
but
it's not
no,
really
by, the, by the time the Jags play the Titans, he'll have about 250 yards.
Sure.
He'll be rolling.
But just another note here along the lines of Chris Johnson and Maurice
Jones-Drew.
Maurice obviously off to the best start after three games in his career, which is
hold that every year.
And also, if he gets 100 this week against the Bengals, that would be the first time in his career that he ever had 200-plus yards rushing games in the month of September. Which
early on, yeah.
Wow.
They may not let him come to camp next year.
Hey, Maurice, hold out again. We'll pay you the day before camp is over.
And what's notable here, you hear so many things said about a guy during a holdout. And I had a lot of fans who would email me and say, are you worried that Maurice – will come back and give less than 100% because of this whole situation? And I answered a lot, no way, because if you know anything about Maurice, that's not his MO. And again, like last year, most of Maurice's yards this year are effort, grind it out, sacrifice the body type yards. You cannot question the guy's effort.
Well, but I was wrong. I never questioned his effort or how hard he'd play. I did not see him being this productive this early. I thought it would take him longer to get into the groove by not being here, and it was one of the reasons I was critical of the fact that he was holding out, because I thought it would hurt the team ultimately.
I was wrong. I never thought that he'd be as productive as he was last year coming back from that knee surgery. And I said that this year, when we were talking about him coming back, what can he do? And I said, you know what? We doubted Maurice last year, what he could do. You can't doubt Maurice because you just don't know. He's a special player.
But, Jeff, you didn't see him this productive this early.
No way.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was wrong.
But does it shock me?
No, because
of what he did last year.
How then do you integrate Rashad Jennings back into the running back rotation if he's healthy and ready to play? Because we talked about what a strong preseason he had and what he was doing in terms of developing. And now all of a sudden he's been out a couple of weeks.
Well, he's got to play first. I mean, you got to play.
If you know he's going to be healthy, you can work him in and give him carries. When Malarkey was talking today, it sort of sounded like, they're going to play it by ear this week and sort of see how much he practices. There doesn't sound like there's a tremendous amount of confidence that he's going to be available at 100%. I think they hope he is. Once he gets back to 100% and get in there, then I think you can work some things out of the backfield to him. I think you can work him into the game plan.
But I want
Rashad to eat some glass. You know what I mean? Eat some glass.
Yep.
I'll say this, though, about... I don't think he had 29 carries on Sunday.
Maurice,
28
carries, and then probably three or four more catches.
Yeah, they had 193 total yards, which, by the way, is the second best.
So 32 touches
production from scrimmage.
That's too many touches. I mean, I'm now talking not just what's best for the, what's best for Maurice.
Well, right.
I mean, you cannot have 400 touches a year after year, and expect to have production long term. I just don't think. Now, listen, Maurice could prove me wrong again. I mean, I was wrong this year, but I think for the long haul,
it has to wear you down.
They have to bring somebody else in to take some of the load off Maurice.
And Rashad needs to show that he can do it
for a
stretch of games.
But ideally, I think you want Maurice to have about 20 to 25 touches a game. You get over 30 every now. On special games where you need them and it's grinded out and there's something going, a little bit like this past weekend where you needed him to carry the load, that's fine every few games. I don't think you can do this week in and week out.
25 touches a game, that computes to how many touches in a season?
350.
No, it's 400.
Oh, 400. 350, 400.
That's a lot of touches.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's too many.
That's a lot. And he had
32, I think.
32?
31, 32.
That computes to more than 400.
Yes. Great observation, John.
480.
Captain Obvious over there.
That's 480.
Well, last year, what do you have, 346?
Actually, it's not.
346 rushes, about 380 total touches last year.
Oh, no, it's not, is it?
So, and he had 1,980 yards. All right, well, we've hit the quarter hour mark, and we'll send it back to Joe.
Thank you, Brian Sexton.
Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is live at Latitude 30. We'll be here till 8 o'clock. Come on by and see us. We will continue on Jaguars Radio. Well, Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller Swiss watches are available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, the Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carboon Jewelers in Valdosta.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. Back to Latitude 30. Jaguars This Week live every Wednesday night, 6 to 8 down here. Come and join us. Joe's going out into the crowd. He's going to grab a question or two. A reminder, Sunday Jaguars kickoff is at 4:05. It's a special game because Fred Taylor joins the pride of the Jaguars, Tony Boselli and Wayne and Dolores Weaver, at halftime. I know you guys are going to be with him on Saturday night, and you will be on the field for that ceremony on Sunday afternoon at halftime. That's got to be special for you because I know you both think very highly of Fred.
You know, there's a lot of guys that I enjoyed watching play through the years, and I got to see Fred kind of from both perspectives as media, which I am now, and then also as a player. And I don't think there was ever a player that I watched grow more throughout his career than Fred Taylor, from the young man from Belleglade, comes out of Florida, you know, the gold teeth, to what he is today, which, I mean, really would serve as a great example for a lot of players coming up in the league today. And the way he handled himself throughout his professional career, how much of a pro that he was, how much that he learned. And I think Fred's got a lot to offer the league in a lot of different ways. But as far as being a player, great player, could go the distance at any minute, and at any moment could change a game. And that's what a special player really is.
He deserves to be up there. One of the great all-time Jaguars, arguably one of the, you know.
He's the greatest in my book.
That's fine. I'm fine with that. He's one of the
wink, wink.
One of the greatest backs of our era. I mean, if you look at overall the numbers he put up, now he didn't get recognized year after year for whatever reason, but if you look at the overall numbers, yards per carry, and what he was able to do, he's one of the best backs of our generation, you know, of the time he played. He was dominant, and he was a guy who had more power than you gave him credit for and could run away from anybody in the NFL.
Well, what you want in a Pride of the Jaguars, a Ring of Honor, whatever you call it, is you want to look
up
there.
They call it the Pride of the Jaguars.
Well, yes. But what you want when you're putting a guy up there is to look up and go, yeah, you got to be up there.
And it's a no-brainer.
You go to some teams around the league, and you look up and you go, well, I don't get that one.
Yeah,
but
agree.
You certainly with you, Tony, but with Fred.
He's in which category?
Well, both. I mean, you can't write the story. You can't write the story of the Jaguars without Tony.
Or the ones you go, no doubt.
Well.
You were kind of vague on that.
Sort of both. With Fred, you look up at that name when it's up there, and you're going to go, yeah.
Obvious.
You couldn't not have him up there. It's a fit. And if every draft pick works out like that guy, you know, he's the perfect Jaguar. And
favorite Fred moment?
Probably when he ran over the safety of the Colts.
Mike Doss.
I mean, that was
in 2003.
I mean, that moment, the other moment is when he ripped off the long run against the Miami Dolphins in the playoff game at home.
Oh, okay.
That was my second year, third year covering the Colts. And I knew Mike a little bit, and I covered Fred for 3 years. And in the first game, if you remember, between the teams, I think Fred had fumbled or something had happened, and Doss kind of taunted him. And I remember thinking at the time, I went, yeah, it's just really not a very good idea.
He talked in the media, too.
Yeah, and he talked in the media, too.
Fred's response was, we'll see.
Yeah.
And we saw.
And I remember him basically running over Doss and then kind of turning around and waving. And I was working for the Colts at the time, but, you know, I covered Fred for 3 years, and you can't cover Fred and not really, really like him.
I mean, that was...
And I kind of smiled, and I went, yeah, that's probably deserved.
That run over of Mike Doss would rival any great highlight of Earl Campbell. I mean, that was one of the greatest truck jobs in the last 15 years.
My favorite two moments of Fred Taylor are the first week he showed up with the gold teeth, super shy, and was so uncomfortable with the entire process. And I say that's one of my favorite, because then you will look at what he grew to become and the type of guy he was. And he was one of the best teammates, one of the best guys in the locker room when I was on the team. And I know he continued that role well after I left. That, and then the other favorite on the field moment is actually Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. When the game is on the line and we run 34T, which I pull around. Fred decides not even to follow me and cut it back where there's no cutback on the play, basically. He cuts it up the middle more. And I remember looking, going to block a guy, and Fred streaking by, running down the sideline and basically sealing the game.
He'll tell you that's his favorite moment, too, by the way.
Because Riddell Anthony?
Well, because of Riddell Anthony, he also had to deal with Warren Sapp. They had been hanging out that summer. Somewhere in South Florida.
There was a lot. It was a chippy game.
Yeah, they were talking back and forth. And Sapp had basically told him that he wouldn't get 100 yards on the Bucs.
And
he got 100 yards on the Bucs. He scored 3 touchdowns. And the thing Tony said about the growth, and Jeff's mentioned it, he grew because he was such a genuine guy.
Great guy.
And he genuinely wanted to get better at things. He wanted to become a better person. He wanted to grow up. And I think that's why people embrace him so much. Anybody who meets Fred is just so taken by what a humble, genuine guy he is.
My favorite Fred moment was November 2000 in Pittsburgh, Jaguars' final trip to Three Rivers Stadium.
Set the record.
238 yards.
Sunday Night Football.
4 touchdowns. I mean, he had 248 yards, I think, total as a receiver as well. And against the Pittsburgh Steelers on their turf in the cold. Remember, it was snowing that night.
That was
very,
fun.
Very lightly. He did what no other back had ever done. He had ran for that many yards, set a record against the Steelers on Three Rivers. I thought that was fitting for Fred.
It was one of the few games I've ever seen where tackling angles didn't matter. He was outrunning the angles to the sideline on a routine basis against a fast. I mean, it was a remarkable.
Well, the people
that whole season was remarkable. We had 9 straight 100-yard games,
and we didn't go to the playoffs. Don't remind. I mean, it was that team. No reason that team should not have been in the playoffs, and especially the way we ran the ball with Fred that year. But I remember that Pittsburgh game, and people ask all the time, "What was the best part about blocking for Fred?" And I said, "He made you look really good," because that night in Pittsburgh, we were viewed as the dominating offensive line, and we played well, don't get me wrong. But Fred went left, right. I mean, he went all over the place and ran away from people, where we held our blocks and did our job, but he made us look really, really good a lot of times.
He was magnificent. Joe's in the crowd. We've got about 3 minutes left before we break for news at the bottom of the hour. So, Joe.
All right, guys, we have Tyler. Tyler, welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I was just curious with the – going forward with the offense and with the new head coach, is it more that Malarkey's simplifying it for Gabbert? Because it just seems like you were saying earlier, it's just consistently run, 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 pass on third down. Or is Gabbert not looking for the long touchdown or just hesitant? I was just curious about as far as the offense and what Malarkey's calling out there.
Well, let me start by answering that I think the coaching staff that they put together here in Jacksonville is outstanding, and I think that the offense will grow. I think what we're seeing this past week and the week before is a result of having injuries along the offensive front and then also a young quarterback, who I think that they're eventually going to just cut loose. But it's just going to take time. I mean, when you don't feel comfortable as an offensive coordinator that your quarterback is going to have the time to make a throw, it's hard to call those type of plays. And as the offensive line gets healthier, as Blaine gets more experience within the system and has more patience, I think a lot of times he's been a little impatient. It's going to get better and better. I don't worry about it. That's not a concern of mine. A lot of people are saying, oh, here we go again. Folks, couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean, this offense will be a dynamic offense similar to what we saw certainly the first week. And I think it's going to be more like that than what it is what we saw the last 2 weeks.
Do you think that the Jaguars can use this new tight end, Maurice Stovall, in a move tight end kind of role? I'm just talking to people this week, and there's a sense that the guy's a pretty good receiver, pretty tough in the middle of the field, not going to be a blocker because he's only 220 pounds. But they need another guy, don't they?
Well, let me say this about Maurice Stovall. Maurice Stovall has former wide receiver, draft pick of the Bucs, and a lot of people don't know that. Notre Dame guy. And he already started to make the conversion to tight end. And so when I went to watch the tape this week, one of the players I wanted to watch was Maurice Stovall on special teams. Because you can get a gauge for a guy to see if he's got the heart to be a tight end coming from the wide receiver position by watching how he reacts and how he plays on special teams. I think he's got a chance. He's a feisty guy on special teams, and I think that shows that he has got some toughness to him to where he can play the tight end spot.
I think ultimately he's in – would you say he's about 220 right now, Brian?
Yeah, 220.
I think he's going to have to get up to about 235 or so to be
eventually
an H-back effectively. But with that said, I remember doing a game his rookie year when he was at Tampa, and he was effective of making plays over the middle of the field of that kind of bigger receiver. And I think it's exactly what the Jaguars need. They need somebody who can hold the middle of the field and do something.
But he's not the make or break to this offense.
Oh, no,
I'm just wondering if he's a dimension that would help it grow.
It could be, but
I think he can grow into that long term. I think he has that type of ability. Listen,
he played well on special teams, I'll tell you that.
Well, and Jeff, they've been looking for that. That's why everyone waited for years, three, for Zach Miller to be healthy, because they knew that would make this offense more potent. And they were desperately, and they were patient, and injury after injury, and they still waited. And this was the year that it was just too much, and you can't wait any longer. So they still know. I mean, that doesn't mean they don't need that position anymore because he's
no, they do.
And they desperately need it. So I think, to Jeff's point, is Maurice Stovall going to do it this week and all of a sudden become an eight-catch guy over the middle of the field? No. But he gives
him a different dimension.
He does give him a different dimension, and I think if he's willing to work, and if Jeff's right that he has that feisty attitude, he could possibly develop into that.
You know, I was talking with Gene Smith about it earlier today, and Gene said what they really need is a guy who, in a play-action scenario, can hold into block and then release. You know, like a Dallas Clark, like Houston uses Owen Daniels, a guy who can make something happen in the play-action game from that position. That's a dimension they don't have. It's one that they certainly want to create.
Well, listen, what round draft pick was Owen Daniels?
Fifth
round. I'll say this about it, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but Owen Daniels came out of nowhere. I mean, I remember watching doing Texan games and watching them, and all of a sudden you go, who's this Owen Daniels guy? He just seems to get open and make plays, and he became one of the better move, quote-unquote, tight ends in the NFL. Now,
it's not a position you have to draft high
necessarily. No, you do not have to. And it's not a position that a guy, if he has the toughness, if he's willing to at least be a position blocker, get in people's way, possibly he could become that. I'm not going to bet the house on it.
Just wondering whether that's an area where they
but
can
I think
grow.
It can, I think it's a possibility, Jeff.
All right. We got to take a break for news here at the bottom of the hour. Joe?
All right, Brian. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Live at Latitude 30 rolls on Jaguars Radio. Well, you want to see the Jaguars at the best price possible? The Coin Toss Ticket Promotion offers fans the ability to purchase up to four tickets, possibly single seats or in odd assortments, for only $20 each. Now, there are no guarantees of location or whether the tickets are going to be singles, paired, or nearby each other. It's all a toss of the coin. Get it?
I do.
For more information on coin toss tickets, call the Jaguars Ticket Office, 904-633-2000.
Thank you, Joe. You know, we spent some time talking about the Bengals and their passing attack and what Andy Dalton is doing with Jay Gruden. What about their defense? Do you see any matchups that you like or that you really don't like with a 2-1 Bengals team that's pretty good?
Who's playing right tackle?
let's assume Cam Bradfield, right?
It's still a tough matchup.
Still a concern for a guy coming back from an injury because Carlos Dunlap is a big man. He's kind of a freak, a physical freak. He does some things that are special.
And Michael Johnson's not bad either
on the other side, pretty good. But I think that Eugene can handle him, no big deal.
No, I do. But Geno Atkins is a very good defensive tackle. Made the Pro Bowl last year. Kid out of Georgia. I think their linebacking core is good. Secondary is suspect, in my opinion.
Well, they really beat up.
Terrence Newman playing corner, we should attack that.
Yeah, see, I don't agree with your statement on the linebacking core. I mean, I like Ray Maluga, an SC guy despite. but they had an injury. They lost one of their guys, starting Will Howard, I believe his name was.
Thomas Howard.
And then they have –
Manny Lawson.
Vontaze Burfict playing a rookie and then also another guy, and they're
Manny,
not as good
Manny
as Howard.
Lawson.
And Manny Lawson, to me, is not very good.
All right. I think they're better, a little bit better than you. I think that Fred Seven's pretty good.
No, I like the guys up front, the defensive line.
No, I'm just saying, as a unit, they're pretty good.
Ray Maluga, I like him. The other linebackers, eh. The secondary.
The secondary, eh. I think you can go after.
But, you know, the one thing, though, that concerns you about secondary is how veteran they are. I mean, yes, Terrence Newman didn't play well for the Cowboys, but you have him. He's got a lot of years.
Got Pac-Man.
Jason Allen's got some years.
You got eight first-round picks in the secondary.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm not concerned for that so much, but that's an indication. I mean, these guys have been around the block. You know, when you've got that many first-round picks, well, all of a sudden on one team, they all weren't your first-round pick.
Yeah, it also means that they didn't work where they were picked in the first round.
But you still got to throw on earlier. You know, it doesn't matter what secondary
you're
playing.
You're going back to that again?
That's the whole key.
So tell us how you feel.
I believe that it usually doesn't matter who's in the other secondary. If they know you're throwing, it's hard to be successful.
All right. 355-NFL1. I haven't thrown the phone number at all tonight.
But I think it's a good overall team.
They're a good team.
They're 2-1. Again, I saw them opening Monday night against Baltimore. Baltimore, it was a close game until the second half. Baltimore ran away with it in the second half. And you know the big reason what they did?
No, tell me what happened, because, you know, that's the only game I didn't watch on film.
Joe Flacco had a field day against that secondary.
And they had all their guys. Except for the rookie first-round pick, Trey Kirkpatrick.
They did have all their guys. They didn't have Carlos Dunlap, though, so they could not get the pressure that I think they saw last week against the Redskins. But other than that, they had all their guys, and Ray Rice didn't run the ball very well against them at all. But they got after him, and their secondary got after him. And once it got away from them, then that Baltimore defense just overwhelmed the passing game a little bit. They had some success with A.J. Green and Hawkins and everything else.
Hey, just kind of not really changing the subject, but you were talking about Baltimore. How about Joe Flacco? I mean,
he's good.
Wow.
All of a sudden, he's very close to being elite.
I mean, we were talking to the
it's
guy.
His team. The it's
last,
his team.
Yeah, the last couple years, you were talking about the guy as if, you know, he's just a middle-of-the-road guy, and now all of a sudden he's really starting to emerge as one of the better quarterbacks in the National Football League.
We always knew he had the arm strength.
The problem with Baltimore, though, is that defense.
Yes.
They got big issues.
Well, it had to happen at some point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Ray Lewis had to look as if he was a 17-year veteran.
And he is, and no Terrell Suggs as well.
How quickly it can change. Last November, the Ravens were here, and I don't think anybody would have thought that Joe Flacco was an elite quarterback. And I mean, he was better than that over the course of last season, but he was not this at any point last
season.
He's
really good.
Just a real quick note, did you guys happen to see the NFL Network A Football Life on Ray Lewis last week?
No, I haven't.
I did not. I saw clips of it.
Very good.
Tom's is this week.
This
right?
Wednesday
tonight.
Night, Tom Coughlin, A Football Life tonight on the NFL Network, and I'm looking forward to watching.
I want to ask you, if you think that Joe Flacco's emergence comes along hand-in-hand with Torrey Smith becoming a big-time, fast, down-the-field receiver.
Doesn't hurt, but no.
It's more than that.
Because he's had tight ends. He's had Todd Heap at one point in his career.
It's confidence. It's seeing it. It happened with Eli the last couple of years. Monday night last week. I'm watching the Giants, and all of a sudden I said, you know, this guy's elite, and it's not changing. And the lights come on for Flacco. He sees it.
It's been a season.
The game has slowed down for him. And as a quarterback, that's critical. And it started happening last year in game. If you watch certain games, I don't think it was consistently, obviously, what we saw here on Monday night. But this year, I noticed it during the preseason when we went up there. The guy it's still Ray Lewis's team, but he is the guy.
But, you know, when you thought about him a couple years ago, he was a quarterback that, you know, the last couple of years wasn't happy because they kept running the ball to Ray Rice, right?
Well, they were a team that was built around their defense, so they played great defense and handed it off to Ray Rice, and everything was super conservative around Joe Flacco, so he never had even a chance.
Right.
And you did hear those complaints.
I'm just saying there's some comparisons. You know, you talk about a Jacksonville team, many people could say, you know what, hey, Jacksonville's kind of in that same boat, but, you know, a couple years ago in the same situation as Baltimore was.
Well, and the obvious comparison is, you know, Joe Flacco, 5 years until we're talking about him in elite category. You got young Blaine Gabbert, who's only started 17 games.
A lot of times it takes time.
It does take time. I can hear the fan base as we're talking about this, about people listening in the car. They're saying that Joe Flacco's been to the playoffs every year he's been a starter.
Yeah, but.
No, I know it's a yeah, but I'm just saying, I understand your comparison, Jeff, but I think as the fan base is saying, okay, that's, you know, it's easier to be patient with a quarterback's progression and maturity if you're winning and going to the playoffs. The Baltimore Ravens were a dropped pass in the end zone last year from being in the Super Bowl, and they had been in the playoffs every year. Joe Flacco and John Harbaugh have been the coach.
But,
so that's your overall. I get your point. I'm just saying, from a fan base, I think the fans would be like, "Okay, that's great. Can we do that progression and growth?"
So we'll agree on that. We'll agree on that point, and we'll share cobbler somewhere here.
as true as what Tony said is, though, as an organization, you also have to be smart and say, well, just because we're not going to the playoffs yet doesn't mean we give up on this quarterback.
No.
Right.
I'm not saying I would – we're not even close to that conversation, in my opinion.
Well, fans are, though.
But it's – the fans' reaction is bigger than Blaine Gabbert.
I understand that.
The fans' reaction is looking over the last
– 4 years.
Even
decade,
more than that.
Decade.
Right.
Yeah, but it's the last four that you hear the most about.
The last decade of mediocrity and below average. And they are frustrated. And so while we can see glimpses and there's a lot of things to be excited about because you see the growth of Blaine Gabbert, I don't begrudge the fans for being frustrated. And when I try to have this conversation, them looking at me and going, really?
I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to
hear
it.
That's what you hear. Yeah.
I want to win. And I understand that.
And I want to take a break.
And I understand that as well.
Joe?
Thank you for all your understanding. Hey, this Sunday during the Jaguars-Bengals game, Fred Taylor is going to be inducted into the Jaguars Pride of the Jaguars. Don't miss this historic event brought to you by Florida Blue in pursuit of health. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna live at Latitude 30 continues on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back. Final segment, Jaguars This Week Live from Latitude 30. Enjoying the hospitality. Thanks to Allie, wherever she is out in the crowd. Take care of us this evening. She's the best. If you come down here tonight, ask for Allie.
She's a rock star.
And we tip at least 20% for Allie tonight. Just make sure.
Give her 25.
Yeah, all right, 25. 30? Okay. It's climbing right now, folks. You know, we have not spent much time at the phone at all tonight, so let's just leave it out. And let's go
too
right
to... Too much to talk about.
The other games around the National Football League, tomorrow night, Cleveland at Baltimore. I mean, that would seem to be an easy one to pick, but there's some blood, bad blood between these two teams.
I think we need to be careful about saying easy games to pick, because how many people in America
had
the Vikings beating the 49ers?
Right.
That's the NFL.
That is the NFL. This year, more than ever,
offenses usually preclude you from big upsets.
Okay. We saw the New England Patriots lose to Arizona.
Yeah.
Maybe not as big as upset now that we thought of, because it looks like Arizona's pretty good. And I'll say this about
Baltimore
Cleveland.
Will win that game at home.
I think Baltimore will win as well. I thought that New England would beat Arizona as they traveled across the country to about as long as trip as they can have, and they didn't. And here's the one thing. Baltimore's run defense is not what it was.
True.
And if you got Trent Richardson, and if you can get in a game – where it's a grind it out, you get a couple turnovers, you possess the ball, and you make it a 17-14 game, that's how the Browns are going to have to win. With that said, I agree with John. I think the Ravens do, but nothing would shock me this year.
Yeah, I just think the Ravens are really good.
I think this is an easy question for you to answer, but I'll ask it anyway. If you had no Ray Lewis but Terrell Suggs, how much better is the Baltimore defense?
They're better.
Much.
Okay. Much, because Terrell Suggs can rush the passer. He's 7-8 years younger than Ray. If taking away the Achilles injury, if he would not have had the Achilles, he'd be still near the prime of his career,
right,
coming off being the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Ray Lewis, first ballot. I don't know who does not vote for him to go in the Hall of Fame.
Everyone does.
Great player. but he is 17 years long in the tooth playing in this league, and that takes its toll on you no matter what.
It's looking that way right now. All right, Sunday, Carolina at Atlanta. I think we know what Atlanta is right now. You know, one of the best teams in the league.
But it's a division game. It's a game that people are familiar with each other. Cam Newton does he rebound? Does he stop pouting on the sidelines? I think there's some drama off the field in Carolina.
There's a little trouble there.
I do, too. I think Atlanta's good. I think Atlanta's really good. I think they beat the Panthers.
All right. The Patriots are coming off that loss in Baltimore on Sunday night. They're going to Buffalo with a team that's won a couple in a row since embarrassing themselves on opening day against the Jets.
You got to think. I mean, it looks like a have to for New England, and usually win those at home.
It's in Buffalo.
Sorry. Well, then that I think Buffalo beat them last year.
They did
in Buffalo.
Three or four turnovers by Tom Brady last year.
I mean, obviously, you can't see it happening again. It's hard to see the Patriots beat one.
I don't think the Panthers are as good as they were. No,
Patriots or the Patriots.
I mean, we are the other P team. I think the Patriots aren't as good as everyone thought they would be. The offensive line is a little bit porous. The no Aaron Hernandez really hurts that team because I don't know how dynamic they are. They do have Brandon Lloyd. And defensively, you know, you talk to some people, they think they've missed on the draft for a long time on defense. On the defense side of the ball. So they're not very good defensively. They still have Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and, you know, all the lore of them. But I would not – I don't want to pick Buffalo, but it's a game that – I'll be watching closely, and I wouldn't be surprised if Buffalo wins.
Being a division game, it could, but you got to think they're going to scrap their way to.
Okay, I'm going to pick Buffalo just because you're picking New England.
Right. Here's an interesting one: Minnesota, coming off their big win over the 49ers last week at Detroit.
Has anyone heard the status of Matthew Stafford?
I haven't seen the injury report today.
I haven't either. So he left the game. It didn't seem. It was a hamstring, I believe they said, and so you don't know how serious that is. I still think Minnesota's – I don't think they're very good. And so I don't know how they beat San Francisco, but I think Detroit wins this game.
I agree.
San Diego's at Kansas City. Kansas City obviously coming off that win. Yeah, but they've got Jamal Charles who ran for 191.
That's fine. I'll take San Diego. San Diego's defense is pretty good.
Seattle at St. Louis.
I think Seattle's defense is outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, as much as the other night was a fluke, they're pretty good.
You know, plus if – they don't have to catch up the ball and they still get touchdowns, they're going to be tough to beat.
Here's an interesting one. San Francisco at the New York Jets. The Niners stayed in Youngstown, Ohio this week, which is the ancestral home of the DeBartolo family, the owners of the 49ers, because they're playing at New York and this Jets team is reeling with the loss of Darrelle Revis.
Well, and the reason they're staying is because they played at Minnesota last week. So
they don't want to go all the way back. Right.
I think the Jets are terrible. I don't think they're very good.
Right.
I don't think they can run the ball because Sean Green. I read a stat, and I can't remember who they compared it to, but they compared it to another back, and I maybe it was C.J. Spiller or somebody else. I don't know who it was, but they said yards after first contact, and this person had it was Marshawn Lynch. That's who it was. Marshawn Lynch has 186 yards after contact. Sean Green has one.
I was going to say nine, but yeah.
One, I mean, he's just not – I don't think he's very good. And I think Mark Sanchez gets a bum rap because I don't think he has any real talented guys around him, and I think he has progressed and got much better. I think their defense is just all right. The Dolphins were gashing them with Reggie Bush before he got hurt. I think the 49ers beat them by two touchdowns.
And the 49ers are good and should lose two in a row.
I think the 49ers win by two touchdowns in the Meadowlands.
Here's a division game. Tennessee's at Houston.
I think that is a 21-point victory by the Texans.
Houston's good, and the Titans, like the rest of the division, probably aren't quite ready to play at Houston's level.
And the Titans beat – everyone says, well, they beat Detroit. If I'm not mistaken, they had a punt return, a kick return, an interception return, fumble return.
Five plays over 60 yards.
It's one of those days.
Miami's at Arizona.
Miami's better than I thought they were. They have the – and I was shocked when I saw this, and I watched it firsthand. Their defense going into last week, and they didn't give up very many yards on the ground, only give up 2.2 yards per carry, number one in the NFL, 53 yards a game on the ground. And they played the Texans. And they played the Raiders with Darren McFadden, and then they played the Jets, who aren't very good.
Doesn't it seem like that's usually a game that the Cardinals lose?
It is.
They get it going, somebody goes out and beats them. I think they're pretty good.
If Reggie Bush isn't healthy, then I think the Cardinals win easily. Reggie Bush healthy, I think it's closer, but I still think Arizona's pretty good defensively.
Which means they'd be 4-0, and that's that. You know,
no one would have thought that based on their quarterback drama in August. How about Oakland to Denver?
I don't know how good either team is. I can't get a feel. I was shocked that the Raiders beat the Steelers.
And came from behind by, what, 13?
Yeah, because I watched them on tape against the Dolphins getting ready for that game last week, and they were not very good.
Right.
I mean, they don't have a lot of talent outside. And Carson Palmer threw for 340 yards, but they still scored 14 points. They beat the Steelers. I think the Broncos are a ways – I think they are a ways away still from figuring out exactly how they want to play and what they want to do.
Peyton doesn't have receivers yet that sort of know how to play for him.
No.
And that's a problem because he's not
– his arms, he's not himself.
Right. So you've got a bad combination there.
So
they're scrapping and getting close, but it's not –
only because
not winning yet.
My dad's here and he's a huge Bronco fan. I'm going to pick the Raiders.
Yeah, there you go.
So I'm going to pick the Raiders.
Lead him with the left and then nail him with the right. All right, here's what that would have been a featured game at some point. New Orleans at Green Bay.
I think Green Bay beats the doors off of them.
Yeah.
I don't think New Orleans is very good.
0-3.
I mean, they're very good. And John made a great point. They are a bad 0-3. The three teams that beat them, the only victory those teams have is against the Saints.
Right. All right, we got less than a minute. So how about quickly the Giants at Philadelphia?
Giants.
And Chicago at Dallas?
Dallas. I think they rush.
I think Chicago wins out.
I think they rush Jay Cutler and knock them all around, and you get the pouty face.
All right. Guys, thanks so much. Thanks to everybody at Latitude 30 and Joe Fortunato and Craig for being out here and helping us put it all together.
Thank you, Allie. Wherever Allie is.
It's always nice to be nice to the waitress.
Great food.
You bet. She's terrific.
She is great.
That'll do it, folks. Have a great night. Talk to you on Sunday.